All right, give me one sec. I'm going to drop the updates in the chat.
Happy New Year, everybody, by the way. It's our first call of the new year.
New Year, happy ETF day.
Yeah.
I thought yesterday was better for the ETF news. That was much better.
So is the next thing an ETH spot ETF? Was that already a thing?
No, snacks. SNX ETF.
Oh, snacks, mate. Yep. DeFi, yeah. Let's go.
ETH is never coming. I'm sorry to burst your bubble.
Cardano, straight to Cardano, yeah.
It's Solana next, sorry.
No, Cardano.
Well, and ironically, get like a fucking Litecoin one or something.
Nice. All right. We welcome everyone to the first call of the year. The plan going forward is that we, Fund Council, will do beginning of their call in private and then roll into this public call for the majority of the public update and discussions. For anybody new, GovCall Chat is the channel where most of the trolling and some legitimate questions actually happen. If there wasn't anything else the council want to talk about first, we can roll into some of the tactical updates. I know we do have a SIP presentation at 45 past, I think, in half an hour. Yeah, cool. So we've got half an hour. We'll get through the updates and then some open discussion. First up, on the core side, team scaling up Andromeda on base. It's been up and operating over the past month or so. And there's already now an SCCP for all our new council members to vote on to increase the LP cap from 50 grand to 1 million. And I've heard that the Treasury Council is also interested in putting in some of that initial LP. Once that's done, then we can raise open interest caps on perps, and the integrators can maybe make their front end a little bit more public and get some public trading going on base. Questions on scaling up base from the council? Commentary?
Just not sure. Will the Treasury Council just seed liquidity, or will they also be adding some bribes to Aerodrome?
At the moment, the plan is to add some LP, some liquidity. The TC has used its locked Aero to vote for the SNX/USDC pool, but isn't adding any incentives at the moment. I think the consensus amongst the TC was to hopefully do as little as possible. So at the moment, there's enough liquidity in that pool, I think, for the amount of trading, and the APY is still pretty good. So yeah, as needed, but I don't think it's needed at the moment.
Yeah, I think,
yeah, looks good. Just checking it.
I think from Quanta's perspective, we have a small handful of people testing, and it looks like just one person filled up most of the OI. So as much as we can tell them to lay off a little bit and leave some room for other people. I think it would be, even before we're ready to go a little more public, it would be good to get a rush on just getting like a small amount more OI in there, just so like a couple of people can trade small amounts. It doesn't have to be huge.
Kav, just a question for you, whether it's worth discussing just now over the call how the launch has gone on base since Christmas. And also, I mean, merely saying it's 50k cap, but yeah, so just any update on the progress before we vote on that SIP?
Yeah, sure. I'll just give one off the top of my head. Anyone else feel free to chime in, but the caps have been at 50K for LP and there's only been about 10K deposited so far. It's all been in private access. The open interest caps are also only 10K, which makes it kind of hard to do any meaningful trades. I think in the past couple of days, that has filled up. So the alpha testers aren't really able to trade any further. So trades most days, from Polynomial, from Infinex, from the using the SDK, and from Quenta. So daily trades, the capital's been stable. As far as I'm aware, everything's been behaving, and now we're at the point where we can start scaling up the LP deposit and then slowly scale up the OI to allow perps activity to increase.
What kind of marketing are we doing? Public marketing?
None.
Other than blogs. And is that intentional?
Yeah, because the...
Coming up.
At 10 grand.
Coming up.
So
after Matt, we lift it.
Yeah, Matt might be able to speak more, if Matt's around, can speak to that. I think there's a bunch of things queued up, both with base and marketing directly, but it's all been held until we can have a bit more. Is Matt up? Where is he?
I see him. He's here.
Yeah, I can do it as can Mike. Once LP caps increase, we'll be doing the, you know, wide range of activities as it's, you know, educational blog post, you know, Twitter Spartan Spaces, Liquid Conversations, things of that matter, and, you know, combos with base and so on. It's a little too early to share plans on that. You know, we're still very early, you know, with this 50,000 caps. But as things move up to a million and we start feeling comfortable directing traders and users to this, then we can start to ramp up comms and marketing activity.
Do you guys have any best guess on how quickly we'll fill up the new cap? Do you consider it pretty conservative?
The 1 million, like the proposal for today that Cav is going to lay out?
That's right.
In terms of how quickly that'll fill up on the LP side, I guess it depends how quickly the TC and others deploy assets to it.
I think the suggestion of the TC is that we put in a few hundred thousand that isn't planning on withdrawing anytime soon, so that should give us the confidence to increase the open interest caps progressively, with the confidence there is an LP that's trying to withdraw quickly, and so that should give us ability to increase open interest caps, allow more trading to happen, and you know, some fees start to be generated, and then we can look at the LP side again.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. We at least have a big chunk expected to fill up.
Big
chunk of the 1 million. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
As some friendly local whales that have been getting prepped to drop some liquidity in as well. So I think it'll fill up fairly quickly.
Okay.
Okay, it doesn't sound like there's any other questions on that. Spartan counselors, get your signers ready. Snacks friends, do whatever shenanigan threesomes you need to do to get your votes ready.
The configuration for V3 is staged.
I love how they have a logo before they could get their ENS configured correctly. That's pretty impressive.
Oh, that is FUD. It was configured correctly the whole time. That is absolute FUD.
Worst run.
Hey, that's my story. I'm sticking to it. Sam Payne.
Oh, I did want to mention before we move away from MLC those question. Matt also didn't touch on the fact that they're working directly with integrators behind the scenes too. So I can confirm I don't know if Matt wants to release too many details about what's going on, but I can confirm that they're working directly with integrators behind the scenes, because Matt has been very helpful to us. So there's definitely a marketing plan going on, from the synthetic side that I have personally seen in tangible form.
Yeah. Yeah. Happy to share details as things ramp up pseudo as well. So, we'll be in constant conversation with the SC and you guys will see it laid out. I drop more info in the chat here.
And to everyone on the call, reach out to your favorite perp integrator of choice and ask them for inside access if you're a trustworthy or semi-trustworthy person of interest. All right, moving on. Next step on markets. There's two things coming up here. There is a Perps V3 has some updates in the works. There is a SIP coming for that soon, so I've heard. But that's adding some additional features that have been identified from integrators and from early feedback. And the L1 perp is essentially through its first audit and preparing for its second audit by the end of this month. Also still waiting on a SIP. I think we've learned that publishing SIPs later gives our competitors less time to copy them. So that's the justification behind the SIPs taking a little bit longer, even though they are being drafted on the inside. Any other questions or commentary around that?
Am I front running a bit if I start asking questions about the market wind down proposals?
The SIP, that's the one we are presenting today, but I mean, if you wanted to ask anything, I'm more than happy to answer it or anybody else can.
Yeah, I think we can probably talk about the SIP more specifically when we get there, but I guess, what I want to know that might not fit into the SIP discussion is like kind of the broader plan, and where this fits in, because I was a little surprised to see so many markets being wound down, because I expected the kind of wind down of V2 to take quite a bit of time. And so I wasn't sure if this meant that we were looking at an accelerated timeline for winding down V2, if there was some other reason that, you know, just those markets in particular were looking to be wound down, and then we were going to kind of leave V2 in the state that it's in for a while. Just kind of want to know the timeline and plan there.
Yeah, I think maybe I can speak to my personal motivation was that there's a lot of markets and the surface area of managing those, as we have noticed over the past couple of weeks, has become challenging. And so it did make sense to me to start winding down those low usage markets to reduce the surface area of what either the Spartan Council or the CCs or the hopefully at some point appointed Risk Council needs to manage. So I don't know that it necessarily accelerated the timeline, although it did seem to fit nicely with us scaling up on base.
My take on it, as well is like, we want to, once we're comfortable, start to, you know, re-enable both the, large cap as well as long tail assets. And so, you know, by winding those down, it gives us, a lot of optionality on the base side to start, you know, picking some assets and re-enabling them over there, as, you know, a bit of, a sort of sweetener, I suppose, right? Because there's not a huge advantage if you're, you know, trading, let's say, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50K on BTC to migrate over to base. But if you have a you know, differential access to those long tail assets, it probably shifts the calculus a little bit. So, you know, my view was like, you know, reduce the attack surface on V2 and, you know, get ready to increase the incentives on migrating to V3 on base.
Yeah, I would agree that anything that's high utilization that's being used and is enjoyed thoroughly by the market should stay on V2 for, you know, as long as it makes sense.
Understood. So, so generally, unless there are other kind of unused markets for the time being, you don't expect a whole lot of very rapid delistings. I know, like, from Quanta's perspective, of course, 20% fee share is very nice. We would love everybody to start trading on Base immediately, but I guess we have somewhat less urgency than maybe some other front ends to migrate people, since we do have a product that people are using, right? So, like, winding down the product that people are using, I think, is going to have at least a little bit of a kind of a negative reaction from our community. So just wanted to make sure that there's, like, a clear plan to be able to offer that somewhere else.
Yeah, I think this was, I can't remember the exact number. It's, it might be 15 markets, but it's less than 1% really over open interest over the past week, I think it was, when this analysis was done. So it really is long tail stuff that's asymmetrically small in terms of volume and the amount of interest to keep them managed. That's the rationale behind it.
Also, there's like a, you know, just a governance overhead, right, of rolling yeah. out these things and reviewing it and what have you. So, you know, my conversation with Cab as when he, you know, pitched me on that was like, I would do the exercise now, just like figure out which ones we can really easily get rid of, do it in one hit, be done with it, and then we can kind of park it for there until, you know, we're trying to migrate people, you know, a bit more aggressively.
Last question on this that's not part of the SIP presentation. Does this mean I'm going to get some pushback trying to list CVX?
On V2?
Yeah, on V2. Or on V3 if we're ready to do it, I guess.
Yeah, see, this is my thinking, right? That, like, you know, we really should be as soon as possible, and it feels a little bit too early. That's my personal take. But as soon as possible, dropping in that kind of, you know, those sweeteners, right? Of like, oh, hey, you know, CBX, you can get on V3 now, right? Like, it's got, you know, it's got more markets. It still gives us the kind of marketing from a synthetics perspective, ignoring front ends, right? It still gives synthetics the marketing angle of, like, synthetics supports, you know, X number of markets, even if we have different markets on different chains. So yeah, my view is we should probably be avoiding adding anything to V2. But we're maybe not quite ready for V3. So, like, I feel like there's a 2-week window where it's a really line ball judgment call from the council. I'd be inclined to say no, but I'm, like, really kind of on the fence. So yeah, it's going to come down to everyone else's perspective on that.
Just one other thing that comes to mind there is, if we are just going to start, winding down those markets, how do we approach the, like, stake SNX and, like, the borrowed SUSD and, you know, the purpose for that? Well, I mean, that's a whole conversation on its own once we begin, like, winding down V2 on, the V2 markets.
Yeah, I don't think we're there yet. Honestly, yeah. I don't think we're ready to, I mean, sorry, we can have that conversation whenever. You know, I think I've even had that conversation, you know, 4 months ago, right, in a blog post, right? But I don't think we're ready to have that practical conversation of, like, what practically are we going to do? I think there's still a lot of uncertainty around how well is Base going to work, right? If Base doesn't work that well and, you know, we don't get much traction there, then I think there's a fairly obvious play in my mind, which is deploy Andromeda with SNX onto OP, you know, assuming we think that it is related to, like, SNX versus USDC collateral or something like that. So I think we have a sense, but we haven't run the experiment yet. Like, let's give the experiment a chance to run before we start, you know, freaking out about what we do about winding things down.
Yeah, yep, this is not winding down V2. This is just markets that...
Why are you trying to kill V2, Cav?
Far out. Well, I had a V323 in my Twitter bio and had to take that down. So, I don't know. V324 doesn't have quite the same ring, does it?
When V4?
Is a safe here? I'm just wondering, while we're talking about tail assets on V3, I mean, we probably over Christmas, we had that TRB shenanigans and you know, would just think this is a good time to, you know, maybe go over a post mortem of what happened there. See you in the audience.
You need to read more, Jacko.
Sleep less, read more, yes.
You realize he's illiterate. What are you, realize that's offensive to Jackson. He's actually illiterate, so nice one.
Spoken word only.
I only clicked the green button and the red button. Sorry, V. Hello?
I from looking at like a few different sources of data in the charts, from what I can tell, there was kind of this massive dislocation in the markets that kind of screwed up some of the arbitrage assumptions that are kind of embedded into synthetics perps. For a pretty prolonged period of time, the TRB perp on Binance was trading like anywhere from 20 to 40% below spot. And we mark our markets to spot, like, because that's the settlement price. It's the same with any perp. But I think for a period of time, as the market was very violently dropping, there was such a huge dislocation that the reverse arb was what it seemed like people were starting to do, because synthetics was trading near the spot price and Binance was trading at a 40% discount. So people were shorting on synthetics and longing on Binance. That was the very clear arb. Normally it wouldn't really be profitable to do that, but because the Binance funding rate was clamped to 0.5% per hour, even with a 40% discount, it was profitable to do that for a few hours. And then if you look at the like 30 to 45 minute period where the price was dropping very rapidly, it's also littered with reverts from trades that were open even after, before TRB started dropping. As far as from the data, the TRB perp market was P&L neutral. It's only on the decline that losses were made, it seems like. And during the whole drop, it was kind of littered with reverts because the PIF and Chainlink prices started to deviate by more than 10%, which is obviously never should happen, but only was happening because of the insane volatility that was happening, where even, you know, 10 or 20 seconds difference could make a 10 or 20% difference in the price. So it seemed like even after we had put the positions at the close only, there was a lot of positions that were trying to close on the way down before the TRB had bottomed out, that couldn't close until the dust had settled and the drop was complete and the reverts were starting to go through now. So there was like, it was kind of a confluence of a lot of different things. I think it's like one thing you can't really account for in mechanism design. Like the standard kind of logic is, make sure that it costs more to manipulate your market than somebody would make from the market manipulation in your market. But one thing you can't account for is if there's some other market manipulation happening that costs way more than the profit earned in your market. Obviously, like I think whatever it costs to do that TRB was more than a few million. It was probably a lot, but they gained a lot of it from the position. You can't really count on people piling into a trend like that, where it could just happen where the markets are completely dislocated. So I think the only way, like a lot of people talking about how do we kind of prevent this, is even if the OI was half or whatever it was, $3 million worth when it was launched, if it had just never changed or gone above $3 million, that would have just halved the loss. So all you can really do is mitigate and make sure it's not like having too big of an impact on your overall profitability of your LPs. So that's kind of like my high level 2 cents on what happened.
And so with the lessons we learned, the impact on, like long tail assets, probably isn't significant enough that we could probably still, in V3 have more tail assets. You know, I think, you can see these other perp dexes and like Hyperliquid, they just turn around obviously they're different. I believe they might be order books. They could list new kind of like assets, you know, really quickly. I think even the ENS perps when it got hot.
Yeah, I mean, there's trade-offs, obviously. Like, I think Hyperliquid and HLP, there's a lot more control that the operators have. over kind of limiting risk and listing assets and operating the exchange that we just don't have. So if you want to do it and kind of adhere to the synthetics as standards of decentralization, then it's kind of just a risk you have to plan for and make sure it's not too big when it does happen, rather than something that can be totally outright prevented. But I don't think it affects the outlook of long tail, like, feasibility at all. It's like something that's going to happen every now and then, like, you know, the XRP, court ruling that set the price up like threefold in like an hour or whatever that was. Like, these things, they just happen every now and then, and we kind of still manage to get through them and, you know, make it all back in 1,000 trades or whatever it costs. So that's kind of how we have to, I think, look at it in my view.
Yeah, great. Makes sense. I think then it's probably more of a constant risk management and assessing markets faster from our side.
Yeah, so I've got a little bit of intel that I've run on this situation as well, and had the chance to review it now. Basically, there doesn't appear to be any indication, not definitive indication at least, that the accounts that made profit on Quenta were any, you know, particularly problematic market makers. We weren't able to determine that. It does seem like we could connect at least the downstream stuff, but it seems like the people who are, you know, doing that ARB cycle that Akrip was talking about, were kind of opportunistically doing it. The addresses they were using had been used for multiple things prior to that, and so it, you know, it looks like someone who runs various ARB strategies noticed this, had to jump into it quickly. For example, one of the addresses is involved in some pretty heavy NFT wash trading on several exchanges. So, you know, if you were ready and planning to do this for the purposes of trying to, you know, exploit synthetics, you probably would have clean addresses ready to go with this and not just jump in with whatever addresses you happen to be sitting in front of at the time. So, you know, my sense is that it's, you know, just a bit unlucky in relation to the parameterization on Binance and the chaos there. Someone was definitely doing, as you call it, shenanigans. But yeah, it wasn't in relation to us. I think the opportunity just popped up. So I think we can kind of close the book on that one.
Makes sense. Yeah, no, I think that's about right. I think what we kind of saw afterwards, and I think these markets get more volatile. You could almost classify them as black swan events. We probably saw that last Wednesday, when the markets kind of just dumped, 20% on alts on Wednesday night in, within, I think like 10, 15 minutes. It's just, those are very hard, to manage those events. But I think from a risk management perspective, you try to do the best that you don't lose the whole house in one go on that trade, or again, for the LPs, that we're not going to be just wrecked.
So on that note, Asif said we need to respond quicker, and Caleb put together something that will, I guess, allow us to go to zero really quickly to manage it. There was a discussion about the risk council again. Do we want to talk about that now, or just table it for maybe next week?
That's part of this upcoming SIP presentation, right? We're going to be discussing that at the end of this call.
I think that might be being presented by Caleb.
Yeah, but not specifically the risk council, right?
Correct.
As I understand it from the discussions in Discord, the risk council is a dependency or potentially a dependency on that SIP. I think there seemed to be some consensus in Discord that it probably should be managed by a risk council rather than maybe the PDAO or something like that. So, yeah, I think we can
present this SIP, and if we like it, we then probably need to have a conversation around who will own it. And if the only, you know, good option we have is the Risk Council, then we probably need to either bring back the Risk Council SIP from the dead, or have someone else, you know, gather, I guess, everyone's perspective on how to implement the Risk Council today, given everything we know, and then write up a new SIP to propose that.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we have to have.
Won't be me, I'll tell you that much.
Okay.
Fool me three times.
I think that sounds like the end of the discussion on that. We can probably continue more when the SIP comes up and its implications. Was there anything else we wanted to cover before we wrapped up and moved over to the SIP presentation? I'm seeing lots of mics off, so I'm assuming that's a no. Connor, welcome. Come on up.
Thank you, Kev. Can everyone hear me?
Yep.
Great. So we're going to be hearing two SIPs this evening, SIP 2047 and 2048. Kev, 2047 is you, so if you want to kick it off for us.
Sure, let me drop this chat in here. Drop the link in the chat, SIP 2047. So this is to begin migrating PERPs V2 markets, begin in the sense that these seem to be the markets that make sense to wind down for now. There's two classes of markets. The one is those that rely on off-chain oracles. There's a lot of off-chain logic that goes into knowing whether something is trading or not on centralized exchanges, off-chain, I should say. The currencies and the commodities. Over the break, we had another example of where this logic didn't quite work out for a range of reasons, and markets were tradable on synthetics for a short while, even though they weren't really trading in the real world. So I think that's a reasonable justification to wind down the commodity markets for now on PERPs V2 until we can improve that logic. And the second group of markets that are being proposed to be wound down on V2 are those with less than 10,000 open interest over a week. And I think there's 1, 2, 3, 4. There's about 10 or 11 of those markets. So all in all, these markets that are being proposed to be wound down combined are approximately 1% of the open interest on PERPs V2. But significantly reduce the complexity for trying to manage the off-chain ones, as well as reducing the surface area for these small traded markets that add to the overhead of both governance and monitoring. I think that's a pretty good verbal summary. If anyone wants to ask any specific questions or call out more detailed parts of the proposal.
Yeah, I'm curious a little bit about if there's been any thought as to what we might do to improve the situation for traditional markets, and kind of make sure that they're reliable if we relist them, because these ones I have seen, you know, get quite a bit of use sometimes. They're actually fairly popular, kind of, you know, pending gold and silver's actual movements, of course.
Pith, we've spoken to Pith about this because this kind of was a This was partly related to the Pith state, as well as another data source that we use to determine whether markets are open or not. So Pith has said that they are making some changes to improve this, but at the end of the day, we really do rely on third-party data, combination of third-party data sources to determine whether off-chain markets are active or not. And there doesn't really even seem to be hard and fast rules. So I think there are some improvements coming. But I think given that we don't have a materially improved solution right now, we should wind them down and maybe bring them back in V3. Or earlier if there's a significant improvement in the logic for whether markets are open or not. It sounds like an easy problem, but it turns out it's quite hard.
All right. Any other questions for Cav, SIP 2047?
I suppose my main question for the councillors is there are some tickers in here that are pretty long tail and maybe people don't care about. There are some tickers in here that maybe are more well known. And is there any councillors who would vote this down based on inclusion of some of the tickers I don't want to see there? I mean, I'm directionally, I think this is the right thing to do, but I'm not super pedantic about the exact tickers that are included. So if there's anything blocking this, now would be a good time to have that conversation. Pifa, I know you suggested this should be broken up more.
I would like it broken up a bit more. Specifically, SHIB is the one I'm looking at that I think is kind of a big name.
Yeah, I think maybe if I had to pick a few, I would say Ape, SHIB, Rocket Pool, HIP, Rocket Pool, and Meme would probably be ones that you might want to separate. But then again, they are pretty long tail, but they do have like decent volume elsewhere. So
yeah, I think if the crypto assets could be broken up a little more, and then the TradFi assets separated out, I would personally like that. I'm not saying I'm going to try to yell and scream about you delisting TradFi assets, but I definitely think it's just worth kind of separating those just because they have very different motivations for why we might delist them.
I mean, I get the idea, but that means writing two SIPs, everyone voting on two SIPs. Is there a good reason apart from it feels nicer? Like, you're obviously going to vote as you're going to vote, but is that not just giving everyone more work if we generally agree?
Bert, can you kind of, like, explain more? Like, if we split it up into two, what would each say?
I would like to see, SHIB stay. So a few of these crypto assets I would like to see stay for the time being. And just, you know, we can get this process started, but
do you expect a sudden run up or something?
It's good to have a list of assets that people recognize, even if we're not expecting massive volume to them. And generally, like, I guess from my perspective, it's hard to really say exactly what feedback I'm expecting from kind of the Quantic community when I take this back to them. And so it's difficult for me to say what feedback I will bring back to you guys at this point. But I kind of expect there will be some resistance because this is quite a list of things to delist. And people are just really happy with long lists of assets.
The four I named were, I specifically named them because those are the higher market cap ones. So, you know, just the fact that they're higher market cap, they might have more interest in them, even though there is like low OI right now. Like those are the only four that really stand out to me. But again, I would probably vote this through even as is, just a suggestion, you know, to what Afif was mentioning.
I can definitely say any stake these pairs, those I'm very happy to see go. So in full agreement there.
All right, sounds like there's a little bit of opposition. Maybe we can chat in asynchronously about which to tweak. I'm happy to take one or two out of this and then get it voted on if that's the most practical way through. I prefer not to have split it up for admin reasons, unless there's a good justification for that. Sounds like at least Shib can stay. Anybody else with ideas of things they'd really like to see stay?
I would think Ape probably as well. Like, that's pretty liquid, deeply liquid token. Like, and then they also just did the other side. Yuga Labs just announced the other side or whatever that's coming in February. So, I don't know. It might be one of those ones that you'd want to keep. And it has pretty deep liquidity, so.
Ape is the almost zero volume right now on Quenta.
Yeah, and like elsewhere, it has volume, and also it's like very deep, like relatively deep liquidity compared to some of these other ones like Anchor, KNC, 1inch. Like, you know, some of these like assets are not comparable, but like, you know, grouping them together is not really an issue if you want to just get rid of them. But yeah, if you're looking for suggestions, the ones that stick out to me personally are Ape, Rocket Pool, Shib, and really those three, and also a kind of meme, but like, if you guys want to get rid of it, get rid of it.
Cool.
Vee was talking about how it doesn't make good optics. You know, that's reasonable as well. So, you know, like, that's why I mentioned, like, some of these bigger ones, there's no reason at all to delist them because they do get interest in other places, so.
Cool. Right. I'll take some of those feedback and edit some of the more well-known ones out of it, and happy to take that discussion offline.
Thank you, Cav. Moving on, SIP 2048, Max Market Value Risk Control Module. This one will be presented by Caleb. Caleb, whenever you're ready.
Hey, sure. Thank you. SIP 2048 is a risk module that should allow the operator, the risk committee, hopefully, when they take on shape, to reduce the open interest caps on specified markets to zero. They cannot increase the caps. They can only push them to zero. There were like, we don't have like a risk committee. So it is contingent on the risk committee being formed. But like the SIP does propose that if the Spartan Council chooses, they can delegate an interim risk council that can undertake this kind of responsibility within constraints and monitoring and transparency. So what are the constraints? The constraints are as follows. The markets that are covered by the module can be constrained to only those that are long tail. So like the ETH, BTC, SOL, BNP, the big markets, those are not, they can be like in the contract itself, not be allowed to be affected by the risk module. And therefore, like it's just those low open interest assets that are long tail. The reason why we need this kind of module is because it gives us some nimbleness in terms of taking action when certain activities are seen on chain, off chain. Activities such as those that were seen recently with TRB, and they have been seen also before that, but they weren't as pronounced. So as like Fief mentioned earlier, the way we manage risk is we look at the cost of manipulation or pushing prices around. And that based on that, you know, we can like set the open interest limits. And effectively what happened is that with TRB, the cost of pushing prices around is really high. And despite that, someone was doing it for some reason. The open interest volume on centralized exchanges reached above $300 million, you know. So offering $10 million where the larger market is $300 million is not a lot. It's quite conservative. That said, there are like considerations that need to be done. These considerations are whether a position can be hedged,
anywhere. And if it can't be hedged, then market makers is simply they don't market make. That's the real reality. And in such situations where like market makers cannot provide services, the open interest cap should be reduced. Now, this happens suddenly and not, unfortunately, doesn't happen like gradually. It takes maybe a day, it takes me maybe less than a day, and therefore some nimbleness is required for long tail assets only, because it's impossible to do this on big blue chip tokens. Aside from constraining the scope covered by the risk module, also the SIP clearly lays out that all the configurations that govern the risk module would be like shared with the Spartan Council in private, because it's kind of sensitive topic. And they'll be also like given a presentation on any action taken by the risk module at any point during its operation. And on top of that, if the council feels that that the module is not serving stakeholders in any way, then they can like just switch it to a post date and it will just not work anymore, be rendered deprecated. So there were a lot of thinking behind the making it as under observation of the Spartan Council. So it's kind of like almost an extension of the Spartan Council. If there are any questions, I can pause a bit.
Yeah, I have two questions when I read this that stuck out to me. One is that looks like it's only ability to bring it to zero. Is there any thought about like just having them ability to lower it to any amount, not increase it, but just lower it any amount? Does it have to
no,
be?
No, it's just zero. It's in the contract itself. It should be only to zero because, I mean, like the what we're trying to tackle, as I mentioned, is inability of market makers to hedge skew. And basically, when you can't do that, you don't offer, you know, services. So, and it's printed in the contract itself. It's just zero. You cannot play around. You cannot push it up. You cannot push it slightly down. It's just to zero. And on certain markets that are long tail, in the contract itself, it would be specified which markets would be covered. And so this would be go for it.
Yeah, so just to like to clarify, the thinking behind this is that there, if there's ever a reason that we just want to lower it incrementally, it's usually not as much as an emergency, and we could
the governance. Definitely. This is like, yeah, of course, this is more of a emergency kind of situation where arbitrages are not feasible because of some market action, or if prices are unreliable, this also happens. Very rarely, especially when we saw the ENG. You remember we like lowered ENG to zero. That was also like the thinking behind it was that PIF prices are not too reliable. They're spread out between different exchanges, not because of PIF specifically or Chainlink. It's because of like the token itself. Even Chainlink like reached out and said like, you guys better lower ENG caps to zero. And we already had done so already. There are certain situations that calls for action. Sometimes this action is a bit more urgent in order to safeguard liquidity providers. I want to mention, like, I have to like mention this again. It's only on long tail assets. Most of the open interest caps on synthetics would not be covered by the risk module, and I think it's pretty safe to say that ETH, BTC, SOL, BNB, the large things, you know, they are not easy to manipulate as similar to BONK or other things that you have listed that are probably more susceptible to pushing around. I do want to mention something important here that like we have seen this before, you know, manipulation is not new to us and we take it to consideration seriously. Initially we like to lean against it, you have to like, you can do two things. You can either play with skew scale and so that to make it more costly to manipulate, because if you manipulate and you like take a position, you get hit by a slippage that you need to like account for and it's impossible because you get hedged. And so you can like lean against manipulation with that. You can also lean against it with open interest limits, because like if the open interest is low, there's no reason, no point to do this. But there are limits to this, and one of which is this function is like clear breakdown of markets between the spot and perp markets, or PIF prices being unreliable. And in these situations, probably skew scale adjustments cannot be done. Like if we look at the TRV situation, whatever changes you do on skew scale, it'll still be like screwed. And because it's like 30% off in pricing. And so yeah, in such situations, market makers normally like they bow out and they say like we cannot provide liquidity. And on top of that, we have like a situation where PIF itself gives us a signal that prices should be like taken into consideration, that they are not too reliable, and that's measured with their confidence intervals, which are very helpful. Like normally they give you a price and they tell you like how close that price is to the bid-ask spread, which is something good because it tells you like about liquidity, measure of liquidity. And if that bid-ask spread goes from 1 basis point to 50, means there's something up. If it goes to 500, like it went with ENG, then definitely something's up. So yeah, we have these signals that we can use to be able to like take action. But unfortunately, to make it completely off on-chain and decentralized might take some iteration. Until then, this SIP hopefully bridges that gap in the best way possible. And it will be under the Spartan Council supervision, of course, if they choose to follow through with it.
So it says that there's a Gnosis safe that's going to be in charge of this. How many signers are going to be on that safe?
The module will be like not a Gnosis safe. The module will be a contract. No worries. It's a contract that's connected to the PDAO Gnosis safe. And so like it can like enact only one action, which is lower the open interest cap to zero on whitelisted markets. That's it. And this is like a circumvention of the normal process where you need 5 signers, because it can be done like algorithmically. And it will be like supervised very carefully. The parameters of execution will be shared with the Spartan Council before they are like put to the chain. And
right, but my question: how many of like the PDAO are required to sign off for that to happen immediately?
Oh, this will be more of a like automated kind of action that reads on the off-chain markets and sees the issues, and based on that take action. So it's not a signer kind of requirement. It's more of an automated endorsed account that's maintained and supervised by Risk Council eventually. But in the interim, the Spartan Council can delegate this responsibility to an interim council. And that's where the concept of endorsed accounts comes in, because it's specified that it is configurable via SCCP.
Do we have plans for the first endorsed account?
I haven't gotten into that point yet of the, like, it's any account can be configured and it will be incorporated into the SIP before it's voted on.
Okay, got it. And one other question, says this mainly for, this says for purpose V2 markets. Is there any thought of applying this also to V3, which doesn't have a double Oracle?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, like, for V3, I was thinking about, like, making something similar, proposing it. But, like, V3, we have lots more flexibility. One is that we have, like, the markets, they are isolated. You know, they are, like, constrained in terms of how much risk they can take on. Furthermore, they are, the V3 repo is still, like, very easy to update. So we're incorporating changes that limit the open interest cap to a dollar value aside from the normal non-dollar value. So it's the minimum between the two. So these are things that help, you know. And will this module, if it was voted on and approved, will it work? Will it not work? It's like kind of a training ground. Like, a lot of the V3 was inspired by V2, by things that worked. And if this works, you know, on V2, it could be, like, at some point proposed for V3, but at the moment I don't see the need for it. Especially that V3 is a bit more, it gives us a lot more flexibility in terms of isolating that risk into different islands.
Any questions?
All right. Thank you, everyone.
All right. See you in the SIPs tonight. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.